We are Brightside, home of the
Did you replace those posters behind you? Did you get new ones?
These autographed ones, so those haven't changed out.
I don't know why. I don't know if I saw Terminator Genesis last time.
Yeah, so these are the only ones in the office. The ones in the hallway and the ones out in the theater are different. But I've got probably 30 different framed posters as part of the collection.
Oh. And that's Homecoming? Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah, is that the one behind?
Spider-Man. Oh, man. So nice. And yeah. Star Wars. Who autographed the Star Wars one?
Everybody, pretty much. George Lucas, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, guy who played C-3PO, R2-D2. And what's funny is some of them are starting to fade a little bit. And it seems like as they're passing away, they get lighter. I don't know.
What's it like, Back to the Future picture?
So, you know, it's a Force ghost or something.
I don't know. What kind of glass do you have? They have fade resistant glass.
Yeah. So the Star Wars one came framed. The other ones are just in frames that I got from, you know, art store.
Yeah. Oh, I'd be. Now you're out on the West Coast.
Yeah. So Sacramento, California area.
Did you buy them that way? Or do you just run up and down the street with a Sharpie?
So the Star Wars one was actually an anniversary present for my wife. She got it at a
That's right. You told me that. You're right.
For a 10-year. The Pirates of the Caribbean, I got somebody on Craigslist was selling it. Their mom and dad was cleaning out their room and got it. It's autographed and stamped on the back. The Homecoming one, Spider-Man, that came from a local shop that sells autographed gear. So stuff like that. A lot of the other posters, you can't see the rest of the ones in this room or the ones in the hallway. My son worked at a movie theater, so he would bring them home often. And I've got out in the hallway, I've got from 1977, the Star Wars poster that was on my wall as a kid. So I have that one framed. Same poster as this one. I've got, you know, Predator and Terminator from my high school days and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're all wrinkled, but they're framed now, so they look good. But.
Yeah. And the fact that they're the original to you, right? You bought them at what, you know, Suncoast Video, whatever, when you were a kid, years ago. And the fact that they're wrinkled but they're yours. That's the best
part. Thumbtack holes and yeah.
Oh yeah. And I had those, you know, divider doors for a closet and I'd hang my posters, but then I'd have to cut them down slice it down the middle to get it so that the doors would open.
That hurts the value.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Well, it's kind of like taking the Babe Ruth and making your bicycle sound like a motorcycle, right?
There was a story one time about a guy who had found an original Superman comic used as insulation in a house that they were redoing. And it was still in good condition, right? Because I guess you see his newspaper and things like that. Family argument over it ended up getting ripped on the back cover and it lost like thousands and thousands of dollars of value over that.
Yeah, but I bet you it was still worth thousands and thousands of dollars, right? I'm sure, you're like, you just cost me $10,000. Okay, now you're only getting $92,000.
Yeah, that hurts. Well, yeah, so we're recording on 4/26, so happy Aliens Day.
Oh,
it's LV-426 is the planet that they're on in most of the movies, so yeah.
I like that so much better. That's nice. I like 4/26. That's awesome. I didn't even think of that. But look at you.
You're really nerdy.
Now, I just saw you look down at your paper. Was that in your notes?
Yeah.
And you're like, checking out.
Organized guy, you know?
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm sorry to bust on you like that, but no. I've known you a long time now.
if I'm going to bust on you, I sent you an email about getting in the green room. So sometime you got to tell me how to
do that. And I got to get back. You and like a few other people, and I sent them to Todd, and we've literally conversed since then. I've got to get back on him. He just never see. This was a while ago. Todd's like, when we first did the thing, I would send him, you know me, I like to talk. Todd knows me, I like to talk. And he goes, I even text, but and I'll just keep on talking. And then finally he said this in the text, just send me the names. That's it. That's all I need. I know what it is. Just send when I see the name. So that's what I'm doing. Well, it's, you know, it little bit, a few weeks in between, he forgets what's going on. He probably just ignored it. So no, he'll hear this back and he'll be like, oh, DJ, throw me.
Gotta do it.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a few people trying to get in. So I will get hit on that right away. Hit me up tomorrow to remind me, and I'll get on Todd about that. So
no problem.
But okay, check that off your list. Excellent. Yeah. Now let's see if we get you. This is your, you said, and I only know because you wrote on your email your third time on the podcast, right? I was going to ask you, I couldn't remember if it was your third or fourth, but so you're being a veteran now. Do you think we're going to get through the list?
Of course. We'll keep it tight. Not
all right. You're going to keep it tight. Okay.
I can manage this.
You're going to keep me on track. You're truly taking over.
That's what the show's for, right?
Wasn't I just telling you? I need a manager, buddy.
There you go.
I have Joe, the IT guy, and now this is my Joe, the manager guy.
So let's talk about projectors a little bit. So I know
you love
them. So do I. We were talking in email a little while ago about how do things hold their value, right? You used to be able to, when I first got into home theater, I bought an InFocus projector, 7200, which was a 720p early one. Retail on that thing was 10 grand. I bought it used for, I think, $2,000, right? Yeah. So it used to be that you could get, you know, huge discounts, that kind of stuff. So I've been thinking about this, and I think you and I talked about laser projectors and that recently. I currently have a JVC NX5 and a Stewart screen, been really happy with the combination. But as the laser ones have come out, I've started looking around, you know, NX9s have come way down in price, NX7s have gotten more affordable. And, you know, you put a new bulb in it, it's as good as new for the most part. And have had good results. I'm sticking with my NX5, but I'll tell you the story about how I decided that recently. So was on one of the forums looking around and found somebody semi-local to me, about an hour away, who was selling NX7 at a good price and had an extra bulb with it, had all the original packaging, and he was looking for a local buyer. And I said, hey, you know, I'd be interested in checking it out. Can I come over and take a look at it? And he said, no, but I'll bring it to you. I'm like, well, okay, that's kind of generous of you. I'm an hour away. He's like, don't worry, my mom lives up that direction. I'll go visit her and we'll stop by afterwards and you can check it out. I'm like, okay, great. That's the perfect scenario, right? It's on my screen, it's in my room. So before he got here, we, you know, set up a time one evening. I ran an extra HDMI cable from my preamp out there. So I had my NX5 on the ceiling. We put the NX7 on a table just below it. And then we set it up so that when you would hit hide, which blanks out, we got them out of sync so we could go back and forth from one to the next immediately. So we pulled up the Kaleidoscape, put on the new avatar, and we're watching scenes and jumping back and forth. We watched some scenes from some of the outer space movies, Passengers, just to look at the contrast, black level, stuff like that, and a few other movies. We jumped through some Marvel stuff. And the longer I watched it, the more I was like, man, there's about this much of a difference. You know, it's so tiny.
Audio only. He's putting his fingers really close together. because you'll have people on both sides of the fence going, I swear, we have no idea. He might have had his arms this far apart.
there was less than a 2-3% difference. Mm. And I was like, okay, so I can go through the trouble of buying his projector, swapping the two of them out, and then having to sell mine and ship it and, you know, pay commissions or whatever and deal with insurance when somebody drops it, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm like, you know, I couldn't justify the change for what looked like very little difference. So on the plus side, you know, talking about the law of diminishing returns, I didn't make this purchase, but it made me happier with what I already have.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah. And that's what's great about that is like, you get like, that's part of the issue I have with, not an issue, I should say. The things I'm considering is, and I've had some tempting offers at projectors now, like really nice projectors, laser, bulb based. People have offered me projectors at, you know, used or beak stock or whatever. Everybody said, you can imagine people are sending me sales, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the deals I almost pulled the trigger on because it was such a good deal. And I was like, and you know, and it's the differences here or there. But here's my not a concern. Okay. It's more of a, and I know people think that that projector, the one I have, it's a 290, it's years old, it's a 4K. But the uptick that I'm going to get in this room is going to be better. But at the same time, it's a smaller screen. It's closer. It's this. I don't want to do that here.
Right.
I want to do that. Now, here's what's really interesting. I could potentially buy a better projector, and because it's a bigger room and further away on a bigger screen, and end up with the same brightness and contrast level that I have here.
True.
So why would I want to upgrade my contrast here, then go to my new theater a year or so from now, or a year from now, and be like, oh, this isn't as good.
Right. But if you buy a projector also, if you just let it sit in a box for a year, that's not doing you any good, right? No. You don't want to, right? That's the thing about, if you look at the build threads, as soon as someone hangs up a projector, their build stops, right? So
yeah.
You need to, you know, hold off, get the room done, get the house built, get moved in,
yeah,
then get the projector in.
Yeah. Because, and that's the thing. The room is going to be so overwhelmingly new, mm-hmm, that it, my head's going to be spinning, and let's enjoy that. I'm saying that in a good way. I'm not saying it like, oh no, I'm like, because I am considering A-B-ing projectors here, but I don't think that's fair. I really think that I should be A-B-ing them there so that I can get the appropriate, you know, calibration to that room, you know?
So are you staying with the Stewart screen?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would too.
It's
impeccable.
It is. And it's, and I said it to my wife, she agrees with me. She's like, you know, I told her the cost. It is, but it's that one piece of equipment, one piece in my chain that I know, I don't think there's anything better, right?
I agree.
And so if there's nothing better, and at the end of the day, the difference in cost, you could save a few bucks. And I literally mean a few bucks. Like when you're talking about systems like this, when you're talking thousands of dollars on a projector, a few thousand dollars on a screen, thousands of dollars in the room itself. When I looked at my budget and say I went to a lesser screen, I could go to an under $1,000 screen. When you see your budget goes down, like what?
3%? A few percent. Yeah.
It's like, what am I saving when I can just go, hey, it's out of my head. I know there is no FOMO. There is no nothing for, and that's what I love about my Stewart. It's like, I'm never questioning, could that be better? Am right. I seeing? Because you hear issues about different screens, or if you get an acoustically transparent, you can get this, or if you get this, and I had acoustically transparent and I had this and that issues that you noticed. I never have those issues with the solid Stewart screen that I have. It allows me to worry about everything else.
Right. So I'll tell you, I've had three Stewart screens. So I had originally a Firehawk 16x9. That got replaced by a Falcon screen, which was one of the early woven screens. And I was doing some work for the company at the time. And then sold that house. That screen stayed there. Moved to a Stewart Studio Tech 130 on a very inexpensive version of their frame. And then the current Stewart Studio Tech 130, I have MicroPerf, Joe King, whatever, you know, version of it. It's yep. One of the upper end ones. But I've always used acoustically transparent. And to me, the location of that center channel is so critical. I'm very cognizant of if it's above or below the screen, even when I'm watching a movie. So for me, it's always made sense to go with the acoustically transparent.
Yeah. And that the center channel doesn't bother me. And peace of mind, again, it just, I don't have to worry about that, right? And you're just like, because I had the acoustically transparent, it was a daylight. It was that, I forget which model number it was, almost 20 years ago I bought it. So, And I thought that was, I knew I couldn't afford a Stuart then. I could barely afford the Stuart when I bought it. And it literally, when I bought my Stuart, it cost more than the projector I had by probably $1,500 more than the projector. Cause they, and he got me a deal at the time on the Stuart. I bought it through a dealer and they gave me it at a dealer cost. So I was like, okay. And, but I did the same thing with the projector, but that was many years old.
And I've installed, you know, Silver Ticket, and I've used other brands, and, but to me, I think that's for my, like you said, peace of mind. And what I think is the best trade-offs of solid versus perf versus, you know, picture quality, all those things, works best for me.
Yeah. So, yep. So going with that.
So. I hear you. Okay. So now while we're talking about comparing, and I know you've done some speaker comparing lately, I got to tell you a story about, so I used to be in the industry and, was a JBL Synthesis dealer at the time, and got a chance to go down to their main location in Northridge, California, Los Angeles area. One of the coolest things I got to do there was to sit in what's called their, multi-listening laboratory. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of it.
Okay, so what it is, it's a room, stage, theater setup. The front is an entirely acoustically transparent speaker cloth. Behind that, there is a motorized rig that allows you to compare, I think, up to 5 different speakers at a time in mono. So they will, and they will switch positions, right?
Yes.
So they will, you know, speaker A will slide over, move forward, play, and within under, you know, 5 or 6 seconds, that one will stop playing, a new one will take its spot and keep playing. And they are able to do things there that you really start to appreciate the difference between speakers when you can hear them back to back so quickly, you sitting in the same spot, playing the same piece of music or track, or whatever it was. And you don't get to see what the speaker is, right? So you have to look at A, B, C, and I think we did a 3-speaker comparison. The hard thing for me was, I think at the time I was a big fan of, and still am, of the Martin Logan electrostatic speakers. The other 2 speakers, so the 3 speakers were a speaker of the year, BMW 802 back in, this is, you know, early 2000s, a Martin Logan Prodigy, which was their top of the line electrostatic, and then a JBL speaker. And I cannot remember the model number on the JBL. But listening to the 3 of them, I rated what I found out later on, speaker A and speaker B were the JBL and the Bowers & Wilkins, much better than the Martin Logan. And a lot of it had to do with the way the speaker tonal response over the entire frequency range, you heard things missing in the electrostatic. And I was
really,
I had a lot of internal issues over that because I had Martin Logans at home at the time. It was, you know, aspiring to get even better Martin Logans. And after hearing that, I went, oh shit, do I really, really want to spend the money on a speaker that I'd now picked 3rd out of a comparison of 3 speakers? So it was a interesting experience. Now that was listening in mono. I do think that there are things to be said for listening in stereo, the very impressive, 2-channel holosonic type of an experience you can get from an electrostatic, the way it fills the room with sound. So I still have a pair of Martin Logan Ascents in the other room for my 2-channel today. But it was very eye-opening. What you hear when your eyes can't see how expensive the speakers are is different what you hear afterwards. You know, it's different
deal. Yeah, it really is. And I've personally never been a fan of the mono test, because I don't listen to anything in mono. I barely listen to anything in 2-channel. I do now, but my thing has always been, you know, the home theater for my adult life, right? So it's more on how they work in conjunction, and can you explain, like, what are you listening for when you're listening mono and you're just, so you're just going through the frequency range and what you feel is the most consistent.
So we were playing tracks and they would play, you know, a jazz piece or a female vocalist piece or a piano piece. And comparing the three speakers one after the next, you would hear notes that sounded more realistic, more lifelike, better on one speaker compared to the way that same passage played back on speaker B or speaker C. So it was, it was by listening to it in mono, all you were hearing was that speaker's response, no interaction with the room, just how it reproduced the frequency range. And you could tell, like I said, where the holes were, you know, where things dropped out or where its response was not as linear.
Okay. Now, through my recent experience, let me ask you this. Is it potentially not the speaker that isn't putting out the frequency, but it's putting it out in a way, it's still putting it out, but it's just not working for you, the individual? Do you understand what I mean? Like, it's hard to fathom but is it possible that because of the crossover, because of something that maybe for you personally, that speaker doesn't work for you? Is that a potential?
I think in this particular comparison that I'm referring to, it was very revealing of the speaker's capabilities because I was sitting in the same seat, listening to the same amplification, listening to the same source. And really the only difference was what the speaker was putting out. Now, whether or not that speaker matched well with my hearing, my internal preferences, things like that, that's a different side of things. But when you start looking at, you know, the measurements are really revealing of what a speaker can do. And that's where that mono test aligns very closely with what they can measure in an anechoic chamber.
Right. And that's why it's like, that's why I ask, because I'm like, I can't fathom that you're putting out, that they put out a speaker that would be like, okay, you get to this one note and it drops off. Right. And it's like, but is there a way that I don't know. I just know there are different tastes. People have different abilities. Things don't work for some people that work for others. People are more sensitive to different frequencies than others. And that's why we have so many different speakers.
It's absolutely. And I think that what it showed was the amount of science that JBL was putting into their measurements and taking a very scientific approach of what was replicatable, what they could see being done. And I think that there are a lot of other manufacturers who don't necessarily have the resources and capabilities that they do, or that emphasis on a hard science approach.
Yeah. And so,
there are companies that are putting out products that are not entirely linear or flat or neutral.
Yeah. I'm not the measurement guy. I'm the experiences guy. That's how I started the podcast. And that's how I test everything. Because I think that's how we live life is through experiences, right? And it's like, which would you rather do? Go experience something or have somebody quiz you on it in a written test, right? You'd rather get the experience. Feel it for yourself, learn for yourself, show your knowledge by being able to be the capable one to do it, as opposed to, can I write this down? You know? So that's why we're like, I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around the idea that the SVSs are neutral, but still brighter. They have to be brighter. And it's just because of what I'm hearing, right? But it's like, I've always loved the NHTs because I knew they were neutral and they were so, you know, even, and they're not manipulating. And that was their claim to fame back then. It was like, if there's a problem with it, it's not the speaker, it's whatever's coming to it. It's like, so you could take that out of the chain. Is it possible? Like, okay, so is SVS putting the right science into it? And I know they do spend a lot of time before they release a speaker or anything. Are they putting the right science into it to just hit that the right way, still be neutral, but but at the same time be able to deliver it in such a way that it's clean, it's precise, it hits, and it does for me. That's all I can say. I'm like, so far, and I'm hearing the Focals. From what I'm hearing, Focals is supposed to be very similar. That's what a lot of people are sending me.
I've heard the SVSs and really like the sound of them also. I heard them originally, I think the first time I heard them was when they were introducing the Ultra Tower in Las Vegas. Heard it in one of the shows at the Venetian back during CES, and then have installed them into a friend's room that we did and was very impressed. Super capable speaker. So I'm assuming that the Did you lose me there? Am I back?
Yeah, that's what I've been told. Okay. Oh, yeah, but I never lost anything. No. Cool. I mean, you sound a little wonky for a second, but I got it all. I heard you. Moving on. What else? Okay. What do we got?
We talked about comparisons. Let's talk a little bit about movies now. I am in currently the eighth week of a film studies class focusing on action movies. So my wife is a guidance counselor. Oh, she's always looking for stuff for students. This is at Sacramento City College, but they have
Teaching it?
No, I'm in the class. I'm taking the class. So I'm a college student again.
Nice.
Yeah. So my wife said, "Hey, you should take this class." So I signed up for it, went online, and I'm getting a whole new appreciation for what my kids are going through in college now that everything's online. You don't write papers anymore. You do it all on your computer and send it in. It's like social media or something, but it's been a really fun class. We've been getting into a lot of the details and in the weeds and history and neat things about action movies that I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about.
Oh, yeah. Really? So what movies have you gone? How long are you into this for? Like, how many weeks have you been into this class?
I think we're in week five. It's an 8-week class. It's Tuesday, Thursday nights. And we,
It's almost over. That's too bad.
We start at 6:30. He lectures for about an hour, and then we watch an action movie. So now I told him, I'm like, look.
Sounds like this podcast.
But I told him early on, I'm going, look, I got a home theater at home that blows away your classroom setup. And, you know, they've got a big 16:9 screen and a mediocre projector. Yeah. And I think there's a bunch of clip speakers, three in the front above the screen and two in the back, and no acoustic treatments in a classroom, you know, stadium style seating. So I watched the first few minutes. I'm like, I'm going to go watch it at home. But we have watched, we started with some of the old black and white stuff. So we watched a movie called Modern Times, which was a Charlie Chaplin one. We watched a movie called The Great Train Robbery, which was an old silent 14 minute long, one of the first movies with cowboys and a train robbery. We watched Speed when we were talking about tropes and cliches within movies. We watched Aliens as we were talking about sci-fi and different character types. We talked superhero movies, and we watched Hellboy. For special effects, we were watching Jurassic Park. And then just last night, we started getting into spy movies, and we watched Goldfinger. And so you watch these movies, and you write papers on them. So we had a midterm paper. You had to compare two different movies from the same subgenre. So I wrote a paper comparing Aliens and Ender's Game and the heroes within it, the villains within it, the settings, the impact of their actions. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Now, do they get into any of the home theater aspect and how that influences the
viewing? No, it's more the films themselves. We've talked a little bit about things like box office and when you want to release your movies, how Marvel will stake out weekends, you know, years in advance, knowing when their movies are going to hit the market, and other studios will stay away from those weekends and their release dates. We haven't really gotten into surround sound, or, you know, we've talked a little bit about 4K quality and picture quality and the impact it's had on like special effects and what's more visible. We talked a ton about, so the T-Rex scene in Jurassic Park, I'm sure you know, with the two explorers.
One in it?
There's a dinosaur.
There are going to be dinosaurs.
But about half of that scene was shot with a practical effect of a dinosaur, you know, huge, yeah, two-story tall one that when it got wet, the latex rubber soaked up and got too heavy and didn't work right. It was like, you know, Bruce the Shark from Jaws. The other half of it you know, all digital. That there was, so when you see the T-Rex running, there's not really a T-Rex running there. But it was, yeah, it was really interesting to talk about. That was all done in the rain to hide how bad the effects looked. So, you know, the, especially mm-hmm, the digital effects that weren't that good. We watched the scene with the raptors that are in the kitchen chasing the kids. We watched, yeah, a version of that done with stop motion. So where they actually would,
yeah,
move the dinosaurs, that, a, yep, micrometer. And then we watched the same scene from the movie that was all done digitally. And it was really neat to see back and forth the comparison between the two. So neat stuff like that. Yeah. We don't really get into the home theater side of it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I think that would be interesting for people to learn how much the home theater side of it, meaning like how impactful the sound is. Everybody likes a big picture, right? Everybody knows that. But I don't think the majority of the population understands the impact that sound has in these movies. Absolutely. And how much more it can enhance
everything. Right. So if you think about in Jurassic Park, if you watch, there's a scene where the Gallimimus, the dinosaurs are kind of, you know, running, mm-hmm, through there, and it's an all digital special effect. But what really sells it is the impact of the sound, is hearing them run down either side of you, hearing the subwoofers, hearing the impact as, mm-hmm, they're stomping around or jumping over things, hearing them go overhead as they're flying through, you know, so it's, that helps to bring you into the experience so much more. And that's not something we're talking about in the class right now, but something I like to bring up.
Yeah. Right. It's also something that, so for instance, you mentioned they use the rain, mm-hmm, right? To hide the imperfections in the CGI. A good sound mix will hide the imperfections in the CGI because we are only capable of taking in so much information at once, right? And if they have you emotionally with a story, right, that's going to do something for you, make you, okay, you could take all the sound away, and if it's emotionally gripping, you're going to be forgiving of whatever you're seeing, right? You're just going to buy, mm-hmm, in, right? Okay. That's one aspect. Another is if they get the room spinning, they get the sound going, you're not looking, maybe you're not going to pay, or not maybe, you're not paying attention to each and every one of those Gallimimus feet. Is there a shadow under every single one of them? Why does that one look like it's float? You turn the sound off. That's now you have extra stuff to you have more resources in your mind to process. So you're looking going, wait a minute, that guy looks like he's floating. Wait a minute, those two match. These two, like, what's going on here? Right. You start noticing other things. Whereas if you get the whole room going and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's like I'm there. And you're like, no, it's not.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, that triggers that whole fight or fight response, right? Right. That if the more you're into it, the more your pupils are dilated and you're jacked up and listening, you know, you're thrilled by it. So it's
right.
It's easier to buy into those things.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how all this stuff works, and they know
that they're making the movies.
And that's, yeah, and that's it. They know colors, how they're going to trigger you in a certain way in that movie. Or they go, what was it? Oh, did you see the Fabelmans?
Not yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh my God. There's a scene in that where they're like, it's early on and he's trying to, like, they do a gunshot and all he does is do a white screen, like for a single frame. And it gives you that, it looks like a flash. It's so funny. And he's like, okay, we'll do that for everyone, you know, whatever, when he was a young kid. And it's little things like that. And everybody's like, oh my God, that's so realistic. And you're like, no, it's just a white frame.
No, I think my wife and I were watching a movie, picking which movie to watch the other night. And that was on the list. She ended up picking that we watched The Whale, which was Oscar nominated also. Not as fun of a movie, I'll tell you that right now.
The Fabelmans, The Fabelmans isn't a fun movie. It's good. It's, if you love the history of movies, if you love Spielberg and you love the story, but his childhood and everything, I mean, by it, it's, I'm not going to say it's Schindler's List like, but it's not, it's not easy.
Not a happy right? uplifting.
No, he had a, he, I mean, he was in it. It was from a time where, I mean, he was bullied hard. He was the Jewish kid when it wasn't, I mean, it, there was a lot of anti-Semitism that was just common. It was that, and people thought it was a joke. Like they were like, oh, okay. It doesn't bother him. Well, of course it did.
No, I'm,
you know, and it's all in the movie. It's great. And I saw it, watch that. And if you haven't, started listening to Smartless yet, after you see the movie, listen to Spielberg on Smartless. Okay. And then it makes the movie. You're just like, oof, because if you watch it first, you'll watch the movie in a different way. Although he is trying to promote it, I liked it the other way. I hadn't heard him yet, but it was really good. It was do those in
definitely
conjunction.
Put it on to watch soon. Okay, so I've got two other scenes to mention to you. You had talked about a movie, District 9, that for your subwoofers, when the engine shuts off and how much of a change that made for the way the room felt and what the impact of the subs were. Have you seen Ender's Game?
Okay. No. That's the Harrison
Ford. Yeah, he plays the Colonel Graf character. Mm-hmm. But it's, first of all, it's a really, really excellent book written by Orson Scott Card that they made into a movie. And it's about the humans had been attacked by aliens, and they start training kids from a very young age to learn how to be these ultimate commanders for their space fleets and all this kind of stuff. But there's a scene in it where that starts on Earth, that all of the new recruits go into this rocket. They're being shot up to their space station. And as the rocket takes off, I mean, a huge subwoofer, huge, you know, at reference level, shakes the whole room. And then as soon as they hit zero gravity on the edge of the Earth's atmosphere, they start floating around, but the base goes away. Because in space, there's nothing to carry it, right? So that you don't hear the vibration anymore.
Isn't that awesome?
And as soon as the subs went away, I was like, oh. Well, there's been a change, right? Something happened, and it doesn't, they're not, you see them start floating around in zero gravity, but they don't address the fact that, you know, the rockets or engines are still going. You just don't hear them anymore.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that cool when sound is that important, that it's the absence of sound is even more so, because you might not even know there's like a base layer of sound in the movie until they take it
so
away.
That
you just think it's quiet in your room, and then all of a sudden it goes away and you're like, where did that go?
So watch that movie, very good Sonic Light Escape, but that scene I'm talking about is about 12 minutes into the movie where they launch off, and it happens again later on in the movie where there's just two of them on the shuttle. But check that out, you're like,
I'm gonna check that out.
The second one I'll mention to you isn't a movie, but it's a series, and this is good for Halloween time. You know, October's a little ways off, but Netflix show called The Haunting of Hill House. Have you seen this one?
I haven't. I think John has seen it. That's been out a couple years it's been ago, out right? For a while. And there's a sequel to it.
Yeah, too, I haven't seen the sequel, but The Haunting of Hill House, based on a book written back in the 60s, tells the story, and there was a movie in the early 2000s called The Haunting, also same storyline, but the Netflix, they expanded it over, I think it was 8 episodes or something. But there is a scene in that, and it's about ghosts and the impact of a family and tragedy and all this kind of stuff. But one of the characters who grew up in this house becomes a mortician. They have a funeral parlor. There's a scene where these two characters are at night in the funeral home, and there are things happening that are just pounding on the walls that my subwoofers are going crazy. And it was all off on the right side of the room. You could hear the ghost, the monster, whatever scary thing was happening. But I was amazed how much of it was just directed to the side of the room. It wasn't on screen stuff because you saw the two characters on screen, but whatever else was happening to cause the walls to rattle where they were rattling the walls in the theater. So, and I think that was probably 4th or 5th episode. It's a little ways into the series, but that's a great one to watch for October.
I love when they move bass around the room.
You'll like this.
And it's, you know, cause it's like, you're supposed to not be able to localize it. And the reason I love it is because you can't localize it. But what they are doing is they're giving you something to pull you that way, to make you think it's
coming. And the upper harmonics, but yeah, absolutely. So
mm-hmm. yeah. That's what I mean. It's like, how am I feeling that in my chest? But it sounds like it's mm-hmm. coming from over there. And I know my subs aren't over there.
Yeah. I got two subs in the room and none of them were on that wall. So yeah, it sounded like they were.
Yeah. And even to the point that at times, say an explosion happens on that side of the room, your brain will tell you, you felt it in your arm mm-hmm. when your body felt it, but it's sending, all the signals we're getting is it came from over there. Cause they're going with your auditory and your visual, this explosion was on that side. The ears are telling me it's over there. Okay, your senses are telling me that it's just hitting you all over, but we're going to give it to you on the side because that's all we can do. We're trying to put all these pieces together for you, buddy. And that's what your brain's doing. And you're like, okay, it felt like it was over there.
Well, okay. This goes back to the car audio days. And I think you and I talked about this last time, right? That, you know, you had big subs in the car, but if you had your front stage set up correctly, it sounded like they were in front of you, right? That's the goal yeah. that you're always looking yep. for. So.
Yep. Yep. Manipulation mm-hmm. of the mind.
Okay, gear. So I told you we have a more gear focused episode, right? And I know okay. that you had been doing receivers for a while and have recently moved into a preamp. And I think you've talked a little bit mm-hmm. about, you know, it's the Marantz 7706.
Okay. 06.
And, yep. and I've kind of been down a similar path in that I have in the past bought receivers. I had a Yamaha 2400 for the downstairs. I had a Pioneer that I got at Costco for the master bedroom set up in a previous house. But in the theaters, as much as possible, it's always been separates, going back years. So, first one was an integrated amplifier, was a Yamaha. But then working in the industry, getting to know some people, industry accommodation programs and things like that, sold a bunch of my old gear and got into which was at the time the ultimate, which was the Lexicon MC1. So that was my first preamp that really kind of, you know, cemented a home theater experience, and was running that with a set of Soundstream monoblock amplifiers. So had five monoblocks running the system, eventually moved up to 9 monoblocks, for the full theater in the next house.
That's what I used to want. Yeah.
Very cool. And I had been working at the company at the time. So, but yeah, each one was an individual chassis, you know, a little bit bigger and longer than a shoebox. And they could.
Was it the Marantz? No,
these are all my Soundstream.
Not the Marantz.
So Soundstream.
Oh, okay. Because you remember the Marantz one, right?
Very, very similar. Parasound had a really similar amplifier also, which was, long, skinny, you know, inputs, outputs on the back.
Yeah, if you stacked 5 of them in the row, it would take up a rack space. Yeah,
the sound streams
on the Marantz.
They sold an MC1 M1 mm-hmm. and M2, which was 2 of them side by side behind a single faceplate, or an M3, which was 3 of them side by side behind a single faceplate. And I had 3 of the M3s in the rack. So it was, man, you turn that thing on and lights dimmed the rest of the house because it was pulling a ton of juice and filling up all the capacitors. But it was great, you know, very, very strong channel separation, had all my, monster cable interconnects because that made it better, at the time, but, you know, and matched that up with the Lexicon MC1. It was a dream system at the time. A lot of that changed when HDMI came out, right? So
I was just going to say, then they invented HDMI because that's what happened to me with my Rotel.
So I mean, I had, kind of limped along with the MC1 because it was S-video connections where it's as far as up the chain as mm-hmm. it went. It didn't even do component video. So I had a Key Digital component video switcher that I had tied to, you know, through macros, and it would do all my switching for me between my Escient DVD Sony changer, my Pioneer 47 AI Blu-ray player, and I think we had a TiVo box at the time. I don't remember what the other rest of the gear was, but I was running component out of all of it, and none of the video was going through the preamp by that point because we were sending component to the projector, and then eventually got into HDMI. So the importance of switching HDMI got rid of the Lexicon and moved into one of the early pieces, Integra DTC 9.8, kind of the first preamp that was out there that had HDMI switching, and it was, you know, 1.1 version or whatever back then. And yeah. Was really happy with it. It did great. It took, you know, combined my audio and my video switching back together again. Sounded good. You know, it was a big, nice piece of gear and ran all the signal up to the mono blocks. But so I was really happy with that. But the nice thing about it was, and this is kind of where I think separates have an advantage, was I was able to change out that preamp and keep all my amplification the same. Right. So it was
right.
a major feature upgrade, but I wasn't replacing the power portion of the system.
Right.
Sold all that. And eventually in the current theater that I'm in today, I've gone through 3 Marantz preamps. So I had the 7702, 7702 Mark II, when I think we went to HDMI 1.4, and then I moved up to the 8805 eventually. So that's the copper chassis version. And I've got it stacked mm-hmm. along with 2 of the 8077 7-channel amplifiers. So the 3 of them together have kind of been the basis of the system for years. Are those your Huskies?
Yeah, actually, that's my Husky's about to get groomed. And so the dogs are flipping out because the groomer is here and my son's taking them out.
Fun
so,
for you.
Yeah, that's the Huskies. Yeah, it's like, it's funny you say that. Like, you heard them when I was recording with Roseanne. I had to edit this part out, but the Huskies started going. And when I hear them, I can usually take it out. If I'm not talking, like if you're talking and then after the fact, either I can just go out and I can erase that part, or I can hit the frequency and I can noise gate it or do whatever I need to do. Right. So I just let it go. And Roseanne was talking and all of a sudden then Roseanne goes like this and she just goes and starts looking up and she paused and I go, that's my dogs. And she goes, oh my God. Cause she had dogs too. And she's like, I couldn't figure it out. Cause it was in her head. And she's like looking up at the sky. It was so funny. And I'm like, and then we just burst out laughing and I don't remember what she was talking about at the time, but she was awesome because it was like, she went right back into it. And I was like, okay. But I was like, I'll take this all out. Don't worry. But it was pretty funny. So now I just put it back in by telling you all about it.
Well, I've got two Labradors downstairs that we'll see if they make an appearance today or not. But yeah, so I know how it goes.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So, okay. What were we saying?
The advantage of,
oh, yeah,
of being able to
of separates.
Yeah. So like I said, I've kept the same Marantz amplifiers for 3 different preamps, right? So it's being able to swap out just the preamp and not having to buy a receiver has its, you know, advantages. It's at the time it was their top of the line piece. They've come out with new ones since then,
right.
But has still been very robust, way of handling everything. And as, the up mixers got better and better, you know, downloaded new capabilities to the unit. So it does, you know, DTSX, that does Atmos, it does Oro 3D, and then mm-hmm. as the upmixer's capability improved, it made more sense with my wides, you know, and so it's been.
That's what I want to go to. That's what I'm hoping. Like the new Marantz, that seems to make AV-10. The most sense for me. The new A10, yeah. AV-10, whatever. And I really, because I want to have front wides, 6 overheads and mm-hmm. front wides. And just to give that expansiveness of the room and stuff and that it's kind of that middle ground, right? The Marantz, I mean, right now it's retailing for what, $7?
Yeah. But the next step up is double, triple,
A Trinov.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from the reviews and the people I've talked to that I trust that have heard it, they're like, that have some of that equipment, the higher end equipment. And they're like, it's really close to what I got. I mean, like, honestly, it's hard to tell. I think
we already talked about that law of diminishing returns, right?
You can spend a
little bit better performance. But I also think that Marantz makes an easier to use product than somebody like a Trinov or a Storm Audio or some of those companies where it's, you know, more or less a piece of computer gear. I've talked to people who've gotten the Trinov and it comes with a manual that's, you know, 2 inches thick in English only.
Yeah.
It's teaching you how to use that piece.
It's really meant to be installed. Yeah. It's not for, it's it, even for guys like us, it's like, to have it used, to use it right, it really should be installed, right? And the Marantz is a little bit more like, it's the higher end version for the guys like us that be like, oh, I can play with this thing. I can plug it in, use it. And then if I want to play with it, I can tweak it a little bit more, but it's pretty much user friendly, a little bit more user friendly.
Yeah, I think, and I know, you know, the guys on some of the other podcasts have talked about that Dirac is kind of in that same vein where it's, you learn to use the computer, the interface on something like Odyssey is much more user friendly, right? It's plug in the mic, hit the button, you know, yeah. I don't want to say it's idiot proof, but it's a much cleaner, smoother, simpler experience, easier to rerun whenever you want to. Obviously, Dirac gives you much more tweakability if you want to get into all that, but I like to watch movies, not set up gear all the time. But.
Right. And I've said it, my thing with the tweakability is that just more ability to screw it up. I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, and then you're in doubt. Did I do the right thing? Should I mess with this? It's like, whereas I love running the Odyssey and I love the sound I get from it.
So I'll tell you a story.
I'm like, I'm not going to argue with it. I'm just going
to
do it.
The Lexicon preamp I was talking about before, when we moved from our second house to our third house, for a while, I had pulled a ton of the gear out of the, because in our second house, it was a family room setup, right? So, you know, it was a 36-inch JVC tube TV that weighed, you know, 230 pounds. My first high-definition display was the center of the theater, but it was over off on the left-hand side because, you know, the fireplace is in the middle of the room because that's what we want to sit and look at all the time. But I had on the Lexicon, I had turned off the rear channels because I knew that we were going to be using the house until we sold it, but the speakers weren't there anymore. So got it all set up and forgot to turn them back on in the next theater. So spent probably a month or so with no rears playing. And I'm like, man, this does not, what did I do wrong? And you had to go back into it.
Right.
Oh, okay. That was stupid. Turn the rears back on. Oh, that surround sounds back. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's funny.
But yeah.
We've all done it. How are we doing on the list?
So the next thing on my list is kind of talking about your charity for next month. So, I know that you guys are kind of finishing up previous month, but wanted to get into a suggestion recommendation for you for next month's charity. And that is the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. So this is a charity that's near and dear to my heart. My son, oldest son, was diagnosed at age 7 with diabetes and has been living with it ever since. You know, it was a very scary experience to go through as a father, having your firstborn getting diagnosed with a major life illness. But it's something that he's overcome. You know, he's 26 years old now, working, you know, at Legoland in New York, and still, you know, takes insulin 4 times a day. But you know, it's become the norm for him. He's, you know, used to counting his carbs and needs to manage that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the time when going through it, as you know, with a 7-year-old and a, you know, 4-year-old at the time, and then a newborn, you know, it was in the hospital because of the symptoms he was having. And my wife had spent a bunch of time Googling, and she pretty much had a good idea of what it was as soon as they said, you need to bring him into the hospital right away. His symptoms, you know, he was hungry and thirsty all the time because his body was basically starving itself. With juvenile diabetes, your body doesn't make insulin. Insulin is what unlocks your cells so the sugar can get into them, so you have energy. When you feel like you can't unlock those cells, you're always tired, you're always hungry, you're always thirsty. Your body starts breaking down all the fat. He had lost 10% of his body weight, and you know, for a 7-year-old, he was looking skinny. You know, we would sit down to watch a movie. He'd have to, you know, go to the bathroom twice during the course of a movie. I'm like, dude, what's going on? Like, I'm still thirsty. And he, you know, and it was, there were things that were not right. It was pretty obvious. So when we took him into the hospital for the first time, his blood sugar was over 500, which is, you know, 5 times the norm. Your blood sugar should be at about 100 most of the time. And so his pancreas was in the process of shutting down. Wasn't making insulin anymore. Right. So they told us, you're going to be in the hospital for about 3 days while we get this under control. And then we're going to teach you how to do this. And, you know, they started showing us, you're going to need to get these little vials of insulin. You're going to need to get needles. And I remember having to give him, you know, in the hospital, a shot myself for the first time. And it was just, it was a weird, scary thing. And it's come a long way since then. You know, a lot of people will use insulin pumps or they use the insulin pens, which is what he carries with him all the time. He just has a pen in his pocket and gives himself an injection when he needs to. But, but very early on, he said, I'm going to learn how to do this myself. I don't want other people poking with me needles. I'll do it myself. And as a young guy, you know, we would draw the insulin out of the glass cylinder and give him the needle and, you know, he'd do his own shots. So, that was a big transition. But one of the things that helped us through this was the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. They gave us information. They told us lots of people have to deal with this. They kind of talked us through what to expect in life. They gave us resources for, you know, who we could talk to, put us in contact with the doctor that we stayed with for a number of years, as he was kind of learning to get this all under control. But it was a big benefit for us to have an organization out there like that. So, my charity that I think we should support next month is JDRF. You can go to JDRF.org and make a donation. I'm sure that
it'll be in the show notes. Yep, because by when this comes out, we are in May, so we're moving that on.
So then I'll throw this out there. For every donation that gets made through Right Side, I will match it.
Dollar for dollar. Oh, awesome. Right?
Whatever you guys get together, I'm in it for just as much.
Okay, so do you want to have them donate directly? We'll have them donate directly
Have them donate page? Through Right Side. Tell me what you get to at the end of the month, and I will make the same donation.
Okay. And including my Patreon and everything? Like, what I'll do, if you're going to do that, I'll do another month of 100%. So if you're going to do that, I'm going to hit you hard.
I'm happy.
Why am I going to cut it in half? No, I'll do the 100%. And so every dollar that comes in this month will go right back out, and Joe's going to match it. So awesome. I've got quite a bit of experience with juvenile diabetes myself. Nobody in my family, but hockey coaching. I had one of my good friends that I coached with. I met him through coaching. He was the president of the organization. He'd had it since he was a kid, still was wearing the pump on his hip on the ice as a coach. And he played, and he's done all, he got all the way through life like that. And I don't know if I told this story on the podcast, because it's a pretty funny story and everybody knows I'm a pretty sarcastic guy, and all of my parents that I coached, their kids knew I was a pretty sarcastic guy. When you take your coaching classes, you're not supposed to be sarcastic, and you try not to be. I've actually told coaches, don't be that sarcastic. Little kids don't understand. You're just being mean to me. They think it's literal. I would never be mean, sarcastically mean, right? I would just be like, I'd be jokingly sarcastic. But anyways, so we had this kid, Colin, great kid. I had him and his brother on my team, and he was the younger. I coached both of them, two different teams. So Colin's this young kid. We're at practice, and I'm at the blue line, and Colin was in net. And so you got this little kid. He's probably 5 or 6 years old. And he's in all the goalie gear, and he comes up to like my hip, and he skates up behind me, and he's like, coach, coach. And we're like scrimmaging or whatever. And I go, yeah, what's up, Colin? And he goes, I feel low. Shaky. I go, low. No, said, okay, no, yeah. Low. He goes, I feel low. And I look at him, I get right down to his eyes. And I go, well, of course you do. Look how short you are. And he goes, no, he just didn't know what to say. He was like, it was so funny. He was just like, and then the gears were turning in my head, because I'd already been explained, this is what we have to do. His stuff is all on the bench in an emergency for us to grab. We had done it. I'd done it in games. And I was like, oh, I am so sorry. I take him to the door, and his parents are sitting there waiting, because they knew as soon as they saw him coming up to me, they're like, oh, that's it. You know, but I was just like, I am so sorry, buddy. But
yeah. And low blood sugar, it just means you need some sugar coming in. Right. So especially if you've been very active, you've burned through all your insulin, but you need orange juice or candy bar, or whatever it is to bring your sugar back up.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, it's like, after that, I completely understood. Yeah, so we worked through it. I coached him for years.
Yeah,
so.
my son would say, "Yeah, I feel shaky," you know, and that's how he would really know that his blood sugar had dropped. Was like, feel that, you know, the tingles and just, you know, a little bit of muscle control issue. But yeah, that's not uncommon.
His vernacular was low. Like, whoops.
Yeah, and I don't know if you feel as much when you feel high. You know, it's if your blood sugars are high, you don't. It's not as. That's more something you're gonna test and measure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Awesome. So we'll be talking about that one all month.
Appreciate
and hopefully we'll get those donations up there. So for you. So that's awesome. Great one, Joe. Nice. All right.
What else you want to cover? I was going to talk about power conditioning.
Yes. What? Now, are you pro or are you negative or positive? We're talking power or electricity, negative or positive.
So living in California, especially during the summer, brownouts are an issue, right? When you start getting air conditioning running on every street, on every block, because it's 110 degrees outside and the power grid only has so much on it, I still might want to watch a movie around then. So I've always kind of been a proponent. So in my rack, I've got some, they're kind of dinosaurs of their own now, but a Monster Power Signature AVS 2000, which is a voltage stabilizer, right? So it always keeps the voltage at exactly 120. And then above that, there's a HCPS 7000 Mark II Signature Series, and it's a balanced power conditioner. So instead of swinging between 0 and 120, it goes positive 60 to negative 60, and it's supposed to just help keep the electricity, you know, cleaner. I've never had a piece of gear fail on me because of any kind of an electrical issue. Whether or not that would have happened if I had just been plugged into a wall strip or a surge protector or something else may be the case, but it's been kind of like that peace of mind that we talked about earlier, is that, you know, I know that they're clean and getting what they need. Are you using anything in your system currently?
I run battery backups, so I'm running APC
UPS.
I have two APC UPSs that I'm hoping those are fit, like they're balancing anything, because they're giving out the power, but the power, you know what I mean? So you're running off of that. There is one that Tom wrote about that I thought of grabbing, but it's one of those like necessities that, do I need this? It was like a $700 unit that even in his review, and he's not a fan of these, Tom Andre, that is on AV Rant. And so AV Gadgets, he wrote it up, and I'd had it on my desktop for the longest time, the page to buy it. Honestly, I probably would have bought it if it was easier to buy. I couldn't figure out how to buy the thing. I called Tom and I'm like, and they just sent them one. And I'm like, can you give me a number to call somebody or something? Because it wasn't, you couldn't find these on Amazon. It was a little bit convoluted on how you get a hold of these things. So where it's not super, necessity, it's not like getting a new projector where you're going to go, woo. So you'll do the legwork. I was like, oh, all right, whatever. But what I liked about that one is it's 100%. You're always running off the battery. So you're always getting the clean, like pure power from that. And then whatever comes in and out from it, it's just constantly recharging the battery. And even Tom liked that. He's like, this is a really nice system. It's pretty powerful. You can get 1500 to 2000 to whatever. So you could run your amps with this thing, or you could, I mean, they said, talk to your manufacturer and stuff, but. That's the closest I've come, but I looked at Panamax for years. I looked at Monster years ago. I've always looked at it, for, like you said, for the peace of mind. I've never been a big fan of like, it's going to,
Is it going to look or sound any better? Probably not.
It'll look good in the rack. I love how
it's another piece of gear that takes up more space.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've always just had other needs. Like John, I think I mentioned in the podcast at some point, like a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, John texted me and he's like, what do you think of this? And he sent me a power condition. I'm like, he didn't have his projector at the time. And we get that needs all of a sudden, like if you haven't done anything in a while, gear wise, you got to do something, right? And it's, and you got to buy something. And that's what he gets it. I get it. And we laugh. Now we laugh publicly with you guys, but it's, you just want to do it. I've just never gotten around to do it. So Talk me into
I think from a cable management standpoint, right? It's one plug going to the wall. Mm-hmm. Everything else stays in the rack. It's a big benefit. Or our auto sequencing, right? So I send a 12-volt trigger to it. It turns on. All my other pieces of gear turn on, right? I've never touched a power button on anything in all those years. Like I said, the volt stabilizing is nice because that if your voltage were to drop, it'll pull more current to make sure it's putting out a constant voltage to the rest of the system. Plus, there's pretty blue lights, and they you know, it's another piece of gear.
Yeah, pretty blue lights. You could have opened with that. I would have bought it. Right, yeah. Going out on a high note. Yeah, no. So they're blue. Here's a tangent for you. Does anybody use any other color?
Wait.
Doesn't it seem like everything, even Bright Side Home Theater, look at all around mm-hmm. the screen here. I do everything in blue. I love blue for this type, blue light. My favorite color for a car is red. My favorite color in general, look at my work shirt, blue. I got two different shades of it on my shirt, right? I love blue. We all love blue in our racks.
Blue LEDs used to be really expensive, right? So late 90s, they were hard to get a hold of. Right. So, you know, it was red. And you know, think about your alarm clock on the side of your stand, right? It's a red light up display. Right. So,
right. Because that's supposed to anger you in the morning and make you get out of bed.
but the red was very common, even in the monster stuff back in the day. Their entry level was the red stuff. The blue stuff was the more expensive, the higher end. So I don't know if that's part of it or not. But
blue is more calming mm-hmm. of a color. It's supposed to be a more calming color. It's supposed to be more, you know, like red is more of an angry color. It's supposed to invoke like excitement or anger or something, where blue is supposed to be hot, like
versus cool.
Blues, your greens, your exactly, your cooler colors. And that's what blue is. And I'm wondering if that's why they do that. It's just like, it's just a mental thing.
But because you know, would the system work if they weren't there? Yeah, probably work just as well. But
of course,
but they're there and I like them.
Oh yeah. So what should I get now? I'm like, send me a link. Yeah, click on
read the reviews. You know, I think Panamax is still one of the stronger ones that are out there. I know APC has kind of gotten away from
they don't have the rack mount. The two I have stand up.
So I've actually gone out and I bought APC units and replaced the batteries in them because they're really easy to swap them out and they're good as new. Mm. Right. So I think that refurbishing one of them is not a big chore, and the batteries are like $30. They're not expensive. But something like that, I think, is, you know, you can still get the J10s, the J15s pretty cheap and find them local. They're heavy to ship.
Yeah. So that triggering thing, I've never used that. That's how you turn on. So you trigger in for power. That's how you trigger it. Your system.
Yeah. So on most units like that, they will have some constant outlets. So you'll plug in something mm-hmm. like my TiVo box is plugged in that, my Kaleidoscapes are plugged into the constant, and my preamp is. But the preamp has a 12-volt trigger coming out of the back of it that will then trigger the rest of the outlets on the back of the power conditioner, and that will then turn on my amplifiers and the rest of the gear. Yeah, it's makes it a much simpler one-button push, right? So going back to the days when I was telling you about those monoblocks, right? So I had 9 monoblocks. Every single one of them had to be, you know, an individual plug-in. I didn't want to go and turn on, you know, 9 different power switches.
Well, yeah, that's how it is right now. Yeah, exactly. So that it is I am doing that now. My preamp turns on, the Marantz turns on, and then it does trigger. I have the trigger mm-hmm. outputs, the 12-volt little, you know, headphone jack, ding, 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 and it makes, you know, and all my amps come on.
So I'm just doing that through the power conditioner, and then it provides power to the amplifiers to come on.
Nice. So your amplifiers aren't getting power 24/7. Like mine are. They're plugged into the wall. So they could, you know, they got their little light on, their little, you know, standby light and everything. So your amps aren't getting power. Go back power. And think
about it. They may be on the 12-volt triggers now too, that you mentioned that, because I do see the red lights on those. So they may be triggered off that 12-volt. Got to see it. But
yeah.
The advantage there is, like I said, it's easier, simpler.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's when I do my next, I built this rack. When I do the next rack, I want to make it like power lines go down one side, and all the cables go down the other and have it all so it's so the back of it's neat and everything comes in from the side, you know, so you can stand behind it and see yep. everything without all, like, you know, the spaghetti in your
so
face.
It's funny, it's on the back of my rack I have a light. So there's a piece of gear that's, you know, it's like a rack light on a gooseneck, mm-hmm. which makes it easier when you're back there looking for plugging something in.
Yeah.
And then I also have my networking. My rack is deep enough where I could put my switch on the backside because I don't want to see network Cat5 cables coming to the front just to see where they're plugged in. So I'm using an old Hewlett-Packard ProCurve switch, 24 ports, and that's on the backside of the rack, and all my network connection is done on the backside, but it's all nice and clean, but I just didn't feel like I needed to look at that piece of gear.
Yeah, you don't need that. I wouldn't do that either. I run my network stuff separate, and then I run a line to the rack, and then I branch it off. I do a little hub, boop, 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 so everything's well, and, neater, a little bit.
And as there. The system grew, I was amazed how many things between the two Xboxes, the Apple TV, the TiVo, the Oppo, the Kaleidoscape, the preamp. I mean, everything, you know, and I've got a Wi-Fi connection back there, but it's everything needed to be plugged in. So I was, my needs for a bigger switch
kept going. Yeah. Yeah. Same here. My switch went, Joe, my IT guy helped me buy another one. It I don't know. I guess they just go. So I had like a 24 port switch and it just went. So my whole set, I was like, Joe, what's so going on? And he's like, get this one.
I worked for Hewlett-Packard for about 10 years. And so I'm partial to their equipment and all of their networking stuff from back in the day is lifetime warranty. I mean, the stuff's just built. It's enterprise grade and, you know, made to last forever kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, did you hear Keith, that Takeover Tuesday I did with Keith about the networking, your whole house and everything, the whole home audio?
I turned you on to Keith. Right.
That's right. That's right. You sent me, you're the one that's on Easter morning. Yeah, thanks. My fault. That's right. I'm sorry.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh my God. Thank you, everybody. Right. Joe sent me that.
and so I still get a lot of the CE Pro and a lot of the, you know,
yeah,
information from the industry type stuff. And so, yeah, when I heard you guys talking about leasing, and then figured,
yeah,
this is right up the alley of what you're talking about. So that was a good show. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. I've talked to some people about it and they're like, but it's like, that's not really our market. I go, hey, 20 years ago, Kaleidoscape wasn't my market either, but that's dream system stuff that Keith's talking about. And it's
absolutely
just even, but what I like here, that's why I'm not afraid to talk to people like that and dream about stuff like that. I've never shied away and said, you don't need it. No, I know I don't need it, but I have that kind of, I'm like, what can I take from it? What little things can I incorporate myself? Like, I'm literally trying to think of putting a cell system, like he said, in my house so that, because that's one of the things out here. I live in the woods, and when we lose power here, like right now, I had satellite, okay? I used to have Dish Network, and when we lost power here for over a week in 2011, and my whole neighborhood used to come to my, I have a generator. I love to be self-sufficient. I love my house to be able to run when it can't. Right. So it's all right. If I need to, I can run it. We had the whole neighborhood here because nobody had generators. We lost power 3 months later, and then we lost power the following year. Now the whole neighborhood has generators. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I had Dish. And if you had cable, you've only got about 48 hours.
And then it dies.
No. Cable piggybacks off the power lines.
Okay.
So it needs that power to push it through. But they have batteries on the poles. So if you have a power outage, it'll send through, but those batteries will only last about 48 hours. So if you lose it for a week, and I had other friends that had generators and they were running cable TV or internet, it's only going to last as long, that 48 hours, and then you're done. And they were done. And I was like, well, I got Dish, so I'm good. And they're like, yeah, Dish sucks because you get a rainstorm and you lose it. Yeah, well, you lose power and you've lost everything for a week. I lose it for 10 minutes. Okay,
I'll take the trade-off. Well, and then something Ara said about you putting a UPS on your networking stuff made a ton of sense to me. So I've done that since then. But yeah, just because you lose power doesn't mean that AT&T or whoever your service provider isn't still online.
Right. And that's why I have UPSs on in my living room. I have a UPS running that entire system. I have a UPS on my entire, my network. Okay. So we lose power and I have an old style generator that you have to go out. You have to start it up. I plug it into the house and I switch it over and I run the main floor and that, and I get my heat and everything, whatever I need. But if we lose power, I can sit there for 15 minutes. And nothing in the living room. The lights went out, but the TV never flickered. Nothing. And it's like my wife, like I've said it before, I've come upstairs, we lost power.
Yeah. You did?
Never noticed. She doesn't even know. It'll be 4 p.m. and she's still watching TV. She's like, oh, okay. And I just go around and I look at the UPSs and I'll be like, all right, I got 15 minutes before this one's going to die. And, all right, I'll go start the generator. And then you run the generator. So I like that idea. But the idea of if we ever had another year, not a year, a week of lost power, I need something because I'm on the internet now. So when he said that, I'm like, I would love to be able to incorporate that into my house and to be able to keep cellular backup. I know Musk has a system, but it's $100 a month
for the Tesla Powerwall.
Not the Powerwall. He has the 5G satellite connection or whatever, and it's $100 a month, and it's supposed to be pretty good. You get a, I think it's like a 100 gigs or something like that, whatever a minute. 100 gig download or something.
Slower going back up.
Yeah, but in an emergency, but I don't want to pay $100 a month for an emergency that might happen. Right. And so if it came down, I might do it. But yeah, that's the closest I've
Starlink,
seen.
Starlink, is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, Starlink. And I mean, that's the closest we've had. So maybe that might be the system that Keith was talking about. It might be something like that. And people with that kind of a house and that kind of a system, they don't.
Yeah, if you can afford an estate.
It's part of the bill. Yeah. Yeah, it's, so they wouldn't even budget that. But yeah, that's my one flaw that I'm always trying to, especially when a storm's coming, I'm like, oh geez, I'd still be able to run my theater, but I wouldn't be able, after a while you lose contact to the outside world.
You got to run the theater. I mean, that's important.
Yeah. I'll run that. Kaleidoscape will work. My discs will work. Everything will be great, but.
Okay,
I need the internet. I need to talk to you guys. I got another
question for you then. Back to gear for a little bit. You said that you're looking at doing wides in your next theater. Mm-hmm. Will you use the same speaker in the wide location as your front LCR?
I was planning on using the same as the surrounds. Okay. I was gonna run the surround. I was gonna three down the side. Wides, sides, and then rears in the back, all the same, all the way down the side, and then three over the top. And so that's why are you recommending?
No, I was just kind of curious what you were doing. Yeah. At one time, I had almost the identical speaker for my entire bed layer. So,
that's awesome.
Until I upgraded the three behind the screen, and now my wides, sides, and rears are all identical. The ones in the ceiling are the round counterpart to those speakers. So,
I really hope SBS makes an in-ceiling speaker someday to go with it, because I said it to him in the podcast. I think I'm not a fan of on-ceiling because. I get what they're saying. It's like you go to the movies and that's what they have. And it is more universal for people because most people don't want to put stuff in their ceiling. But I like the stealth look. I agree with you. Being able to put stuff behind.
My ceiling is all Sherwin-Williams black. And then we painted this, you know, and then you did, they disappear when they're in ceiling and are painted to match a black ceiling. So, but it, again, I'm upstairs above a garage in a bonus room, whereas you're going to be in a basement. So the sound transfer, when you start cutting holes in your drywall to put a speaker in a ceiling, it's a lot easier for the sound to get up above it.
Yeah. That's my only, I'm building the room within a room. So you'll
need to do back boxes.
Even this,
if you do it in ceiling.
But even my ceiling is going down. I'm going to have two ceilings over me. The design I'm doing is going to be, so there'll be a ceiling separating me from the floor. Not only will it be separate from that room, it will be separate from the house.
Okay.
So I'm literally going to be making, imagine my room's 17 feet wide, 8 feet, you know, 8 feet, 6 inches tall. And then I'm separate from the only thing that room is touching is the floor. Okay. All those walls. And then the next set of walls are going to be, say, 15 feet by 8 feet, 4 inches or whatever, putting a gap in between them. And that's where that gap in that ceiling is what I'm trying to do, because I also want to keep that ceiling low enough that, or high enough that I can have my screen at a right height. But at the same time, I want to bring it down low enough to be able to put speakers in there with can light speakers, backer boxes. And then it'll be like, okay, so I'll build the section for those speakers, and that still will be separate from the ceiling above it, but it'll probably be separate at that point by about a quarter inch.
Right. So if you look at the CEDIA classes and what they teach there, it is an entirely sealed drywall container, right? You're in an aquarium with no water leaking out anywhere, all walls. And then anything that you want for in ceiling or lighting or anything like that, you build down inside that layer, right? So you need to have a layer of drywall that is never penetrated for maximum sound isolation. Yeah.
Right. The only would be literally like on the back end where it would be where wires come in or something like that, but it'd be minimal, very minimal.
Right.
But really separating from the house.
So, I mean, even if you're doing electrical outlets, you know, you're doing putty pads behind those to keep any kind of air transfer, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you know, sound is like water, right? It's going to follow that path of least resistance and try and leak out wherever it can.
Right. But that's what I mean. It's almost like there's going to be an entire room unadulterated outside of my room.
I got you.
You know what I mean? So like I'll be able, and I want to be able to, so easy to run wires down, be able to open a door, you know, a seat, like a compartment on the side, and be like, yeah, it's 6 inches wide. I can just, shoom, I'll throw the wire down there and I'll throw the wire down there. And it's, you know, and have different parts of it will be like sound absorption from the inside and all that. So, but you know, I'm really trying to go for the, you know, the design I'm coming up with, I'm really trying to go for as soundproof as I can make it. Without having to do like, you know, all right, I had this company come in and do this. I want to do it myself. I want to see how good I can get it. And I know it's going to be better than the one I have, because I've learned all the mistakes in there.
Trial and error.
So, yeah, exactly. So that's all I got the rest of my life, that's the trial and error. So just knock it down and do it again if it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, that was, well, one, you're talking about, you know, running wires. It's a lot easier to run wire. Yeah. It's better than crawling up into a 140 degree attic to try and run wire up there. You know, that's not a ton of fun.
No, but basements have issues because you have ducting, you know, that's going to be going pipes and stuff. So I got to try to keep those away.
Well, we made that change in this theater. So, in the house that we're in right now, this bonus room, one, it wasn't sealed off originally. Right. So I had to add a solid core door and frame all that. But then as soon as you did that, the return was downstairs, right? So the room didn't have any airflow at that point. And we ended up having to zone it separately. So right now I've got an upstairs thermostat, a downstairs thermostat, and a separate supply and return for each floor. So I can heat and cool them independently from one another, one at a time. So that's been a big advantage because the system is strong enough to do the whole house, but I can cool off just the theater level pretty quickly.
Nice. Yeah, that's, keeping the theater for me here has been pretty easy in the basement. It's just, this is a smaller room. It doesn't, I mean, the only thing in my room is the projector. Summertime, it doesn't, you know, I have one little vent in the room to get some air. If the AC kicks on in the house, it goes into that room or heat, whatever. And, but yeah, my room has been pretty easy.
So you've got, far. You have seating for five. How often do you have all five in use? Rarely.
Yeah. Not often.
So that's the thing. Yeah. And if you have to size the HVAC for that maximum capacity for, otherwise it gets uncomfortable when you do have the Super Bowl parties, whatever it is, right?
Right. Well, then when I do that, the door's open because then you're going back and forth outside the room. You're doing this. And it does, at that time, it does get warm in there, but I can also, I'll just kick on the whole house fan, like the fan part of the AC unit. And I'm not running AC. It's just exchanging.
Right, getting fresh air in the room.
And usually, nobody's really too concerned about that. We're just having a good time. And that's in February. It's usually harder to keep it warmer down there.
Don't have that issue. But yeah, if you have, 10 people in the theater for 2 hours, it gets stale if you're not addressing the HVAC side.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's, what's funny is we all build these huge, we like to build these huge theaters, but how often do you have that many people?
Yeah, there's one chair that gets a lot more use than all the others combined. Yeah. Because for the most part, I'm watching stuff. Yeah, maybe my wife and I, maybe my son and I. I've got a family of six, now seven. My son just got married. Thank you very much. It's not that often that everybody would get together. Some of the appointment type TV shows when they were younger were a bigger deal. We'd all sit down and watch Survivor together in the theater or something like that. But still that was, six of us. So.
Yeah. We did it with the neighbors here for, I can't remember what show it was, but we all happened to be watching the same streaming show. And this was probably like four or five years ago. And then the finale came up and my wife was like, why don't we all go into the theater and watch it? And I'm like, okay. All right. So eight of us all
crammed in there,
crammed into the theater. Yeah. Crammed in there and watched the finale of some, it was that, streaming show with, I think it was Bill Pullman. He was the cop in it or something like that. It was pretty, they made a sequel to it and everything. It was pretty good, but,
that was a few years ago. Murder mystery kind of a one.
Yes, yeah. And I want to say it was,
Jessica
Biel, I think, or something like that. It was a good show. It was good. And we all got fascinated with it individually as couples. Like me and my wife loved it. But then we found out we were all out one night and everybody was like, have you seen the show? I haven't missed one. Blah, blah, blah. And then we all were like, why don't we watch the finale together? So that's what we did. So yeah. It wasn't really a home theater movie, but Sinner. Yeah, and they made us a second season. The Sinner,
And the song that was from the first season that played over and over again when she would have her episodes and things like that was, I've got that on one of my playlists.
Oh, yeah. So
every time that song comes on, I'm like, oh, I know this one.
Oh. What was the song? I don't even remember what it was. I know what you're talking about, though. Like, didn't it trigger her or something?
Yeah,
or that's what they used or something like that.
She had experienced trauma when that was playing. And so that every time she heard that, she would lose her stuff. Yeah, I could. I've got it somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing is, and I said that, like I said, I wanted a smaller theater for my next one. But my wife's the one that's like, no, I want to be able to have grandchildren in there. I want to be able to host them and a party in there. And I'm like, okay, it's going to be more money because I still have to have my sound quality.
Okay. The song it was called Huggin' and Kissin' was the name of the song. I'm trying to remember who the,
Huggin' and
Kissin'. Yeah, Big Black Delta was the name of the band.
Oh,
you recognize it when you hear it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's in. I get triggered. So, what's your next piece of gear? We're talking
That's a gear. Tough question. Yeah, I
know.
I thought about the projector upgrade, but I don't feel like I need to do the projector upgrade. I thought about going larger with the screen, but don't really think I need to because it's the 130-inch 235 screen, so it's a good size. I think one of the next upgrades I'm considering is moving the projector out of the theater. And I think you've talked about this too for your room, but there's a company that makes projection glass, and you can buy, you know, a 12 by 12 pre-framed piece. And I, in my office that I'm sitting in right now, I'm just behind the theater. And so I thought about hanging the projector, you know, in the corner of this office, which would be pretty close, but not dead center of the theater room, to move the sound of the fans out of the theater. There are times where I'm, you know, switching between the Kaleidoscape menu, or switching between YouTube videos where I can hear that fan going when it's silent otherwise. Right. So you talk about first world problems, right? I can hear my fan when my system's not making noise.
You've got a fan? Sweating over here. No, but that's where we're seriously. That's what you get to that point where it's like your next best improvement might not actually be gear. It's positioning or something else. It could be, I don't know, you know, carpets or, you know, any, it could be anything, but it's like you start to look around and like, where am I going to get the most bang for my buck?
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, diminishing returns, a lot of the stuff we do, it's, you're like, I know I've done this so many times. What am I going to get out of this? You know? And it's like,
and at some point I'm going to consider a larger tariff Kaleidoscape for storage. I've got the 24 now, and I think I have room left for about 42 4K movies. Cause I keep pretty much everything I buy on the Terra locally. So if my internet goes down, I don't have to try and worry about downloading something else.
I have more movies off of mine than I have on it. I only have the 12.
So I've got a 10 Strato and I've got the 24 Terra, but at some point I'm going to run out of space here pretty soon. So
I got to go to the 48 at some point because they don't have a 24 now.
That's what I'm thinking about. And they have 22 single. I'm a big proponent of the, not the compact Terra, because I think I told you this story. I had one of the hard drives fail in my Terra because it's got 4 6s. And I mean, I saw the light come on. I saw the email come in going, you know, drive one has failed. And
I was just explaining that to somebody the other day. It's basically a RAID system.
And so you fold down the front of it, take out 2 screws, pull it out, ship it back to them. I was still under warranty. I got another one shipped back, slid it back in, and started rebuilding everything. Didn't have to do anything myself. So, whereas the compact ones,
but your system was still running, was still
up and running. Just somewhat limited. But with the compact ones, you don't have that same ability to swap out the drives because there's a single drive in that unit and it does not come apart. So, I think the 48, you know, and if I win the lottery, I'm just going to buy like 10 of the 88s and buy every single movie and just have them all stacked up.
Yeah. I know. It's like the 22 to me is almost, I'd be able to have more on my system, but I'd almost fill that up.
So
with what I have. So I'm like, what am I doing?
If you get the 48, you at least have over double the amount of space.
I figured it out. It's like, if I upgraded to the 48, I would probably end up with, like right now I have in total like 380 movies, and I've acquired those in just over a year. Cause I've had, so that's like over a movie a day I've bought in a year. Pretty much a movie a day. Cause it's been over a year. Right. So I'm like, oops. But that's also because I didn't have anything. There's not a lot of, I mean, I have all the Marvels. I have all the Star Wars. I have all the ones that I want. So I'm not really buying as much now, but if I end up going to the 48, I'd probably only end up with about the same amount of space left. So if I had another year like this, I'd be right back where I am with a full, but it'd be full of movies.
Right. But like,
that's a lot of movies.
You know, I wait for them to go on sale, of course, right? So I've got all the James Bond movies,
yeah,
all of the Harry Potter movies, all of the, you know, Fast and the Furious, right? Because they'll kind of come out in waves where they'll, when the next film's in the theater, they'll discount or sell you a bunch of them on there. And then are you on the Kaleidoscape owners forum?
No, so there's a, I don't do a lot of forums.
There's a thread, there's a thread on there where they talk about what movies just went on sale.
Yes, VJ in the green room imports.
Oh, it's that guy.
So I get it through him. Gotcha. Yeah. So VJ has it in the green room, and he imports the and you see all the lists, and I'm like, every time I see him post one, I'm like, oh yeah, crap!
There's a bunch of movies I want on there.
Yeah, and it's like, what did I buy? That I bought it, and then it went on sale a couple days later. It was like, whoops, But yeah, it's like, and honestly, it's in the podcast too. It's like people tell me about movies and I'll see it. It's just so damn
sick. It is, but it's expensive if you do it that way.
You have your phone, you just go boom, boom. But it's not expensive at that moment because it could be $9.99 or $14.99. But when you look on your
$800 credit card later.
Statement at the end of the month and you're like, Kaleidoscape. Oops.
Yeah, I've had that conversation with the wife.
Like, talk about a rabbit hole.
Stop buying movies.
My wife doesn't see the stuff. She doesn't see the bills. I do them.
Are you doing the disc digital yet? I know you and I've talked about that. Did you? Okay.
I have. Yeah. And it really pays off because I got to start putting more stuff in, because what's nice is I did a bunch just to see how it works. And I'm like, boom, 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 boom. And I put them all in, and something just came out recently. Oh, it was the Fifth Element. And I was like, I'm like, oh, a new this new Fifth Element 4K. Or whatever. And I'm like,
boom. Yeah, and if you have the disc in there, it's $4.92 to buy the 4K. And I'm like, yeah.
That's what sense. I got. I got it for four. I'm like, duh, why not? So I'm like, you know. But yeah, it's like, yeah, that's so simple. Yeah,
so
it's like I was just using the same drive I was using for my Zapedi. I just connected that to the Kaleidoscape when they put that software out. And I was like, I mean, literally, the disc goes in. I said on the podcast, I timed it 20 seconds. Boop, boop, back out.
So I sold my Alto, which I was using originally for that purpose, was just importing all my movies. Sold that and bought, an Asus one for $100 off of Amazon. And that's what's in that rack space
now. Nelson has the Alto. When I was down at his house, I saw the Alto system and he runs it. He sent me a video he made, and he plays his movies through the Kaleidoscape on disc with the Alto. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And but every time, if you want to play a movie, you put it in, and then now you have access to it. It's the whole thing. But he did it both ways too. He's a gearhead. He loves messing with that stuff. He does all this. So he has the Alto, he has the Asus system. He had the same Asus that I had. And he's like, he's doing it. Why?
Because I can.
He loves that stuff, because you can. It's like, I wanted to try it out and see what would happen. You already can do it. And he was on me. He was living in New Jersey when I first got my Kaleidoscape. And he was like, you said the same thing. Let me ship you my Alto.
That's all I was there for, was just importing discs, right?
Right. And you both were like, I'm like, I know. But I'm like, to me, especially at the time when I first got it, everything I was buying was Disney, and it was minimal savings on they're not a big discounter. And Disney, it's like $2, Disney $4, is only something ones like that.
I don't buy a lot of Disney. Kids are grown for the most part, because we have Disney Plus, right? I can, I have, I think, all the Toy Stories and maybe the Incredibles, and that's about it. That's Disney animated. So
yeah. Well, I do Star Wars, Marvel.
I have
that all comes that's through true. Disney. Yeah, I have to. That's what I was mostly buying, especially early on, I was pretty good. I think I bought probably a quarter to a third of Marvel full price. And then I they went on sale and I went boom, and I bought the entire all 30 or whatever.
Are you getting discs anymore at all?
You do. Yeah. Yeah. I'll buy them if.
Well, so you're doing comparison.
If I'm trying to compare, yeah, definitely. And if it's not in 4K and after like this past week of me comparing 4K, like up converted 4K disc, and then the Kaleidoscape giving me 1080 and me sending Kaleidoscape sending through the Lumigen, I'm the one this week, it was, I couldn't tell the difference. I literally, it was wanted. I couldn't tell the difference. And I said to Steve and John, I'm like, I literally, it was like a blind test on my own. I kept mixing up which one I was watching. I couldn't tell. I was like, okay, maybe this is it. And then, nope, that one's the right one. Oh, so then the 4K is what, I couldn't tell the difference. But I will tell you, like I said to them, it's like IP Man also up converted to 4K, but it was a little, it was better. It was slightly better than the 1080 on the Kaleidoscape. So
I think I don't the know. Last, I don't so know. I've switched to just buying the digital files from Kaleidoscape now. I think the first Doctor Strange movie was the last 4K that I bought Marvel, and everything since then I've, you know, Shang-Chi, Eternals, sorry about that one. Black Widow, I've all been just, you know, wait for them to come out and click a button and it's there the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, if you don't compare, you'd never miss it. You'd never
miss it. The only thing I miss is shopping. Honestly. You know, I hear John talking about all the time, shopping for deals on discs. I used to be the same way. You know, I would Slick Deals or Amazon or wherever, you know, I would buy a lot of discs, and it's fun to see them come in the mail, and you know, and that's just all stopped. So there's no more packaging. It's no more physical media.
See, I loved going to the store.
Oh, I did too.
I loved going in and running into people, especially in the Laserdisc days, and talking to more people, which is basically what we are now doing here. This is what I love to do, but you had to go to the store to do it. And you, if you talked to somebody that knew what a Laserdisc was, you know, that to me was fun. And then talking about different movies, like, what do you have in your collection? You literally just bumped into this person in the aisle.
What Laserdisc player did you have?
I don't remember numbers. I had a Sony, I had a Pioneer, and then I had my second Pioneer played both sides. My first one, I bought it at like a department store and they had it on sale. It was a Sony, and it was basically an entry level laser disc player, right? I didn't know a ton about it. And then my second Pioneer had the correct input. You could get more out of
LaserDisc. So I remember right as DVD was getting introduced, I was trying to decide, do I want to buy a LaserDisc player? And I remember looking at Costco, the CDL Pioneer 909, right? Was a LaserDisc player that would also play DVDs. I don't know if you remember these. Right? So you could either slide out the whole tray or you could slide out the little tiny in the middle.
The little middle tray.
It was like $900, something like that. I was like, that. And I didn't buy it. It's probably a good thing, because then I would have been hunting around for laser discs forever. But ended up buying a Pioneer 313 or 414 or whatever, early DVD player. Had that for years before I got into, you know, other Pioneers, and then the big Sony changers for DVDs. And then I bought the HD DVD. Toshiba XA2.
That's what I had. A
big expensive player. And then a lot of stores were going out of business. I remember Tower Records went out of business. Magnolia shut down a bunch of stores. And I was buying Blu-rays and HD DVDs at the same time and trying to figure out which format was going to.
Same here. Yep.
Back the wrong one.
Some movies came out on one, some came out on another, other movies came out on both, and I would try to buy those so I could see what the difference was. And it's like, it's so funny. My son-in-law, we were working on his house like last week or so, and he asked me, and he's like, so with the podcast, he goes, do you find yourself watching more movies? And I was like,
I've always watched lots of movies.
I was like, actually, I think it might be slowing me down. I said, because I used to, this is all I did. This is what I did. I just watch movies. And I think I'm sitting here talking to you now. Not that's a bad thing, Joe. But I'd be
watching. I could be watching this if I wasn't recording a podcast right now, DJ.
Exactly. Right. And no, but we, you know what I mean? And it's like that, and I love doing this. It's because it gives me an opportunity to actually, it obviously it's given me this opportunity to talk to people about the movies too, instead of just sitting there doing it yourself.
It builds community, right? It's a way to reach out to other enthusiasts to talk and share that, and
right.
with people that there's not a lot of other folks to talk to.
I like to say it exposes the community, because we've always been here. We didn't have the conduit. Right. And that's all it is. It's just like, we've all like you've been doing this a long, long time. And I've been doing it a long time. Some people are fairly new at it, whatever. It doesn't matter. But we're all like, what's better, sitting in your room alone, just going, wow, okay. You come up to your wife and watch the eyes glaze over and you, okay, next day you do the same thing. But now it's like, all right, I can talk to people about it.
It's a way to share. You know,
Twitter was great for it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and that, but yeah, it's like, I've been A-B-ing crap my whole life. And that's just what I just trying to get the best out of it. What's better? And I mean, we all swore we heard a difference in Monster Cables and we heard a difference in this and that. And
that's, I mean, confirmation bias.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, but when you're all alone, that's all you had. Right. And that's why I said, I'm like, it's the podcast that did away with all that. Not mine. They were earlier than me. AV ran HT guys, the information that they're able to put out, that they were able to put out there kind of killed all those like marketing schemes.
Agreed. The forums helped a little bit, but you get a lot of bias, but yeah, the more honest information they can share, the better.
Yeah. I think the forums now are the detriment.
Depends on,
because there's a lot but that's the thing, is you got to be, and the only way you know is if you have the correct information. It's difficult for newer people, and I have a lot of people coming to me about stuff and going, what is this saying,
and you're like, way about a lot of the YouTube influencers, right? So a lot of those people who are being paid to like things, there's some disingenuity there. So
can I tell you one of my pet peeves? We started with projectors. You want to wrap up on projectors? Projector shoot-offs, whatever, right? Every single one of them. It's uncalibrated, but this is the best. What? It's uncalibrated. Yeah. Uncalibrated. But here's what we did. We set everything is set out of the box, set down the middle, 50, 50, 50. I'm like, I've never run a projector that way. Right? There's gotta be, even like some of these ones I've seen a couple where they actually took the more powerful projector and put it up against the littler one. And they're like, you see how, look at this, the littler one's better. Well, yeah, it is, because it's not blowing out everything. Because they're both going down the middle, and you're like, you need a calibration.
You need to dial it in for the room, for the screen,
for everything, right? And it's like, and then that to me isn't even, that's not going to answer the question how it's going to be in your room.
It's just like Odyssey and Dirac. I can get almost the exact same results out of these two pieces of gear. Audio or video projector, you know, it's like, you can get so close. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of, like, you see the same thing with speakers. Speaker, you know, oh, this one sounds better. I'm like, well, is it calibrated? What is it doing? This one plays louder. This one does this louder, but there's no, and I don't do these things. This isn't my profession. It's not what I do. But did you know, like, when I'm doing my thing with my comparison right now, my first ever public comparison of a speaker or anything, right? I'm like, this is what I'm hearing. This is just for me, but this is what I'm hearing. And I'm hearing this as a little, but I know my decibel levels are still the same, but now I'm hearing it in a different way. I'm not saying it's louder. I'm saying it's like, I'm giving you actual things. That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah, exactly. But when you say like, well, this is the better speaker because it plays louder. What the hell does that mean? Well,
do I need it to be louder in my room?
Right. Or it, you know, in the whole reference level thing, I've had multiple people be like, well, how come this guy is saying that you can't put the reference? It's so convoluted. And that's what I'm saying. You get into these forums.
It can be challenging.
And people, if you're fairly new at this, and I say fairly new, you could have been into it for 10 years, but you haven't been exposed to enough stuff to know the difference of what people are saying. And people, I had one conversation with somebody once where the guy was actually saying, he sent me a video of this popular YouTuber, and I'm like, and he was so confused by it. And I said, he's not actually saying anything wrong. He's just leaving out the information to make you, to let you understand that I was filling in the gaps, right? Like he was just like, oh, you know, and I don't want to get into the whole thing, but it, and that's what makes it confusing for people. And there was these two guys talking and they were like, yeah, but you only need to do this. And I'm like, well, what are we doing here? And I'm doing this wrong and y'all doing this. And that's why I always tell people it was the best advice I got. And it was 20 years ago. Stay out of that stuff. Talk to somebody that can explain it to you.
Look at their credentials, right? Are they certified for what they should be talking about? You know, and then look at who's paying them. You know, follow the money, right? And then you can kind of qualify their advice. So.
Yeah.
All right, you got to get going. Yeah. So to recap, you need to watch Ender's Game. You need to always buy separates for your theater. You need to donate to JDRF, and that'll cost me more money. So I'm going to match those.
That's awesome. Thank you.
And you can go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.